then I saying I'm interested in becoming a bricklayer. We take them through the bricklaying workshop so that they can see if they want to do mechanical engineering, for instance. We take them through those workshops so that they can be able to feel and touch what it feels like to be in those areas of their careers. But we do encourage, particularly during the month of August, which is referred to as the TVET month, which our deputy minister is champion, where he is able to visit a number of schools as well as the TVET colleges to encourage young people to take careers, particularly in the TVET sector. Colleges also conduct work readiness programs during on-course studies such as CV writings, interview skills, job placement, and also provide entrepreneurship information. And this is key, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, as we are part of the World Skills in Durban as we speak. And this issue of entrepreneurship training has come up strongly amongst most participants to say, as you are training artisans and equipping them with skills, why don't we add that element of entrepreneurship so that we don't train just for employment, but also for self-employment. And that message is coming strongly. And as a department, it's something that we are considering strongly in terms of artisanal development. The department has also drafted the student admissions policy guideline that is called the Policy Framework on Administration and Management of Students' Admissions in TVET Colleges. The document will assist colleges to draft their own student admission policies to improve the student access and student success. Career guidance and student placement tests are compulsory in TVET colleges. And we also encourage colleges to look at developing very strong student support services pre-enrollment and during the tuition, but also post, for them to know, because they need to know what happened to those students having enrolled and now completed their studies. They can't just leave them out in the dark and not knowing where they are and what they are doing. This document also emphasizes the importance of student access and colleges. They must ensure that students enter the colleges using the minimum entry requirements or through additional but appropriate minimum requirements such as admission points, a score for certain courses. An example is in STEM courses that will require some good or financial and accounting background, and most that will require mathematics rather than maths. In this regard, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, we have introduced a program where we find that there are knowledge gaps, which is called the PLP. It's more of a bridging program that assists, the learners from DBE to actually try and meet the minimum requirements to enter the TVET college. But we don't want to use this as a barrier to entry, so that ends up excluding learners. But we also provide them guidance in terms of the various options across the PSET system that if you can't make it in this program, we also have other options that are available for them across the PSET system that they can also take. And we can't then send them back home and say as PSET institutions, we cannot assist them. Honorable Chair, with your permission, may I kindly request DDG Fuchane to take over the remainder of the presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, DDG Zungu. Good morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members of the Portfolio Committee, Senior Management of the DHET, Office of the Ministry, the Special Advisor, and to all the colleagues. Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, there are four main key components There are four main key components of collaboration between or areas of interest between the Department of Basic Education and DHET, particularly in relation to CET, which is the area that I'm going to be covering. And those talk to, as we are seeing on this first slide, the National Senior Certificate for Adults, as well as linked to the Senior Certificate. They talk to the Second Chance Matric Program. They talk to the GTC ABET exams, and of course the use of DBE infrastructure in the form of schools. Currently, 96% of our CET centers are operating from both primary and public schools that belong to basic education. Starting then with NASCA, it's important to note that this program of NASCA goes back a long time under the then DBE, and that was in 2009. And the decision to implement NASCA was, of course, informed by the research that was conducted, as indicated here by the authors of that research. NASCA is a very important qualification because it provides our adults and out-of-school youth who have left schooling, most of whom have had no hope of ever completing schooling, to be able to then have an exit level qualification. So it gives them that opportunity to have a school leaving a certificate, which, as you will see further on in my presentation, will also be able to make it possible for them to access higher education. It's important to note as well, as indicated in the last bullet, that NASCA was registered with SAQA, and that registration, the registration date was further extended to the 1st of July 2018. Next slide. In terms of how NASCA is, the composition of NASCA, it has two compulsory subjects, which would be your fundamentals, and that is one language, and then students would have a choice of either mathematics or quantitative literacy. And the optional up subjects are indicated in sub-bullet B, as you can see, and students can then choose two additional subjects, which would be the optional. Important to note as well that a student that chooses mathematics can therefore also not choose quantitative literacy. They can have one or the other, or not both. Thank you. In terms of policy development and finalization of policy, we have a gazette which was published in 2016. But it's also important to note that this gazette, in terms of the final regulations and the conduct, administration and management as and of assessment for NASCA, was thereafter replaced by a subsequent government gazette, which was published on the 17th of December 2021. Next slide. We also have the draft policy on minimum admission requirements for entry into higher education institutions program that require NASCA. This is very important because in my earlier slide, I indicated that one of the key components of NASCA and the importance of NASCA is such that those students who do get the NASCA qualification can be able to articulate into higher education institution, be it universities or be it TVET colleges. The last slide is indicating that in terms of the program development, which we have done and approved and gazetted, there's two key outstanding work that needs to be done, and that is the editing of the languages. Chairperson and members, let me also indicate here that when I'm making reference to the editing, it's reference to not only language editing, but curriculum editing. Thank you. In terms of the curriculum development, this slide will give you a progress update, and you will note that the following subjects have already been completed, and that is mathematical science, quantitative literacy, English, ICT, natural sciences, human and social sciences, economic and management sciences. So that work has been completed. Continuing again with progress on NASCA, LTSM, In terms of LTSM, the draft learning and teaching support materials have been developed as part of the implementation. And here we're looking at an open and self-directed learning approach for NASCAR. Assessment and examinations, the department is developing modules for NASCAR and JETCAR examinations. We are very pleased that we have funding that we have received from the EU, and that amounts to just 19 million. And particularly because we don't have funding that is coming from the fiscus in terms of the development and the implementation of the NASCAR qualification. We are targeting that when we pilot NASCAR, the piloting will happen in our 54 pilot centers, and then we can then take it to scale from that. And in that regard, then the 54 pilot centers that have been identified means that there needs to be a capacity building program for those community education and training staff for them to be able to implement and deliver the NASCAR program once it takes off. Next slide. The following in terms of NASCAR still needs to be finalized, and that is the policy on the minimum admission requirements for entry into higher education institution programs. I've spoken earlier to this fact about the articulation, not only to universities, but to TVETs as well, especially for those programs that are higher than your NQF level four. Also, the editing, the curriculum editing of the curriculum statements for languages. The approach that is being adopted by DHET is to roll out implementation to the 54 pilot centers, and therefore there will be limited enrollment in terms of the students. We are currently targeting that in terms of the rollout, the initial rollout that will be done by the 54 pilot centers will be for the benefit of approximately 10,000 students. Next slide. In terms of the progress to date, and this is the very, very latest progress that we have on the implementation of NASCAR. The chairperson of Umalusi, on behalf of Umalusi Council, wrote to the minister on the 2nd of September last year. And in terms of the communique that Umalusi Council forwarded to the Minister of Higher Education and Training, made the following recommendations: that there should be an interministerial meeting between basic education and higher education. And this meeting, the main purpose of which would be to discuss and harmonize the offerings of adult qualifications, including the phasing out of the senior certificate and the phasing in of NASCAR. The first sub-bullet is extremely important. Currently, DBE is offering the senior certificate and taking responsibility of the assessment and examinations of senior certificate. It is envisaged then that NASCAR is going to replace the senior certificate, and the Department of Basic Education is already working on processes of phasing out of the senior certificate. It is extremely important to note that we cannot phase out the senior certificate without the full implementation of NASCAR, because NASCAR is meant to replace the senior certificate. Therefore, only phasing out the senior certificate and not fully implementing NASCAR will leave a lot of students stranded. And the other matter that was raised was the delay of the pilot. It was that we need, as DHET, to delay the pilot until the intended curricula for all subjects is completed during the pilot phase and is finalized. And that includes assessed curriculum documents that are supposed to be quality assured by Umalusi. To this effect, I've already alluded to the fact that there is curriculum editing that is required for languages. And of course, there is work that needs to be completed in terms of the assessments and examinations. Another recommendation that was made to the department by Umalusi Council was that the department needs to finalize all outstanding policies, regulations, and assessment protocols which are required to support the implementation of NASCAR. Last and important point that was raised is that a lot of work needs to be done in terms of the advocacy strategy of the implementation and the phasing in of NASCA, and of course, the phasing out of the senior certificate by DBE. Can I also indicate that the slow progress in relation to the implementation of NASCA is based a lot on the fact that there has not been voted funds or dedicated funding or any funding from the fiscus for the development and implementation of the NASCA program. It has solely depended on donor funding, which is project-based and which is at best of times not guaranteed or provided on a continuous basis. Next slide. Based on the advice provided by Umalusi, as I've outlined, and for the postponement of NASCA and JETCA, the department then has an obligation to publish a notice in the Government Gazette, which will withdraw the previous Gazette, which had indicated that NASCA would be implemented with effect from 2022. Let me also indicate that we are still in time in this regard because the implementation would have been in the second half of 2022. As a result of the delays in the implementation of NASCA and the lack of funding allocation thereof, which I've already spoken to, the pilot implementation plan, which would have been piloted in the 54 centers of community learning centers, and NASCA implementation, it means then that all those time frames would have to be moved forward, and therefore we'll have to revise all of that. The revisions will consider the time frames to be approved for implementation, as well as any other additional activities that must be undertaken, particularly focusing on the recommendations that have been made by the Umalusi Council. Thank you. Now, this is extremely important, and Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, you might have picked this up as I've alluded in the previous slide, and that is in relation to the funding for NASCA. Can I also indicate that, as Honorable Chair and Honorable Members are already aware, that the CET budget of the department, or the entire department budget of about 130 billion, the CET budget is 2.4 million. Which is just under 2% of the entire DHET budget. In addition to that, within that 2.4 billion, which is provided for CET, the bulk of that budget goes to compensation of employees, mainly the lecturers, which are a much required resource as no teaching and learning can take place without them. And therefore, what is transferred to our CET colleges is subsidies for which operational work must be undertaken is approximately 215 million per annum. Now, the amount that is required for the implementation of NASCA is 287 million, and that is per annum. This 287 million is already in excess of the subsidies which are within the CET budget, which are transferred to our CET colleges. And this per annum 287.3 million is for the piloting of NASCA, which is approximately 10,000 students for those 54 pilot centers. Also important to note, therefore, that we need to make bigger strides in terms of ensuring that there are voted funds for the further development and finalization of NASCA, but even more important for the implementation of the NASCA program, particularly if it is to replace the senior certificate. Also noting, as I finish off on this slide, that this 287 talks to piloting for 10,000 students, while currently the senior certificate is making provision for approximately 160,000 students. Therefore, you would still have to cater, particularly if DBE phases out the senior certificate, the additional 150,000 students. At best, the best that can be done, and what we have communicated to DBE and what we are recommending, is that we cannot phase out the senior certificate until NASCA has fully taken off. Thank you. Next slide. The next slide will then talk to the Second Chance Matric program. This is a program of DBE, which we are also happy to provide in our CET colleges. This program is in support of the National Senior Certificate, and also it supports the Senior Certificate. The Second Chance Matric program, which is extremely popular, particularly for those students, not only those who have not passed, some of them have passed but would want to improve their results, so they would enroll in the Second Chance Matric program. It provides a face-to-face teaching, digital, online, offline programs. It has television and radio broadcasts, multimedia platforms, Mzansi libraries, and also a lot of learning material. I must indicate that in terms of the additional support provided for the Second Matric program, it's second to none. There's very little that is not provided. And whatever DBE provides to schools in terms of the Second Chance Matric program, they also make sure that those resources are provided to community learning centers for the benefits of students. The Second Chance Matric program's benefits are improved learning quality, of course, with the potential to increase life skills, job opportunities, and career pathing and academic progression. Honorable Chair and honorable members, I am pleased to indicate that as community colleges, we are wanting to take the Second Chance Matric program even further, where we are saying that a student who comes into a community learning center for a Second Chance Matric program, ideally they should leave with this grade 12 certificate, but also they should also get a skill, because they can be able to do both, as most of the time they are only doing a few subjects to either improve or get to a pass. And we are also in discussions then with our CETAs in terms of provision of a skill, so they can come out of a community learning center basically with two certificates. Currently, we have a protocol signed between DBE and Department of Higher Education on the Second Chance Matric program for a period of five years. I think that's all I want to say in this. I think I've said it all in terms of sharing of resources and supporting our out-of-school youth. Next slide. We have combined responsibilities, and as I've indicated in the previous slide, we have assigned protocol in terms of this, and that talks to making available resources, not only LTSM and learning support materials, but human resource. The assessment, monitoring, and evaluation of the collaboration, so that at all times, if there are areas of improvement that can be done. We also have an agreement to ensure access to inclusive education to accommodate teachers, lecturers, and learners with disability. Develop and implement psychosocial programs, and we are advantaged in that in this regard. We have Higher Health on board, so we are able as DHET to assist in this regard. And DBE is doing good work as well in terms of their psychosocial programs. Jointly, we are also developing a monitoring strategy for the purpose of monitoring the effectiveness and the efficiency of the program. We also establish an oversight committee for the implementation of the protocol as agreed between the two departments. Next slide. With effect from first of April this year, the Department of Higher Education and Training took over the examinations of GTC ABET exams, because the protocol agreement between provincial education departments that were responsible for this and the department lapsed in March, on the 31st of March 2022. We are, even before end of March, and continuously engaging with DBE to continue supporting DHET on the resulting clearing of any certification backlog that may exist, and examination data and archiving. We have also requested them to also continue supporting DHET and our centers with some of the examination functions. Although we have taken over, there are overlaps and overlays and loose ends that must be tied up. And in this regard, we have also written to the provincial education departments in relation to this support, because currently we are working on an in principle agreement, and thus far it is working well. Examinations commenced on the 1st of June in CET colleges and 1st of June, and they will be ending on the 27th of June. And finally, in addition to this, we have requested for a meeting whereby our Director General will be addressing HEDCOM on all these matters that I have outlined of common interest, where we also want to ensure that we continue our good relations to ensure that the operations in our CET colleges are not hampered in any way, particularly taking in consideration, as I've indicated earlier on as well, that approximately 96% of our community learning centers are operating from public schools. Honorable Chair, honorable members, colleagues, thank you very much. That's the end of my presentation.
Thank you very much.
Sorry,
DG, you can conclude.
Okay. Now, thank you very much, Honorable Chair, and thanks, DG Puchane. I think that concludes our presentation, and we will hand over back to you, Chair, for the questions. And thank you very much, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members.
Thank you so much, DDG Zungu, and to DDG Fuchane for that presentation. At this point, we'll then request for members to indicate their interest to engage. Right, I see the hand of Honorable King is up. Okay, we'll take Honorable King for now, followed by Honorable Mananiso. And then, yeah, we'll take it as it comes. Honorable King, you may go ahead.
Hey, good morning, Chair, and good morning, everyone on the panel, and thanks for the presentation. I must say, Chair, it would have been nice if DBE did form part of the meeting today, because we've got so many questions that we would have liked to have posed to them. But nonetheless, we'll continue. When we look at the NACSA program, it is quite interesting that there is the gazette that's already out, and I just took the liberty to go through the gazette, and dates are already there to say that in June 2022, exams will, enrollment for exams will take place, exams will be in June 2023. But now we hear that there are concerns which was raised by Omalusi, and the NACSA program might have to be revised in terms of its time frame. With the dates already highlighted, are we then certain that we will be able to meet the allocated time frame? Is already June 2022 for absorption of most of the students into this time frame, or will the gazette be re-looked at in order to update the dates that is presented on the gazette? We have a problem when it comes to Funza Lushaka bursaries. Coming from a teaching background, you would find that at most schools, students are not literally taking subjects like mathematics, pure maths, I'm talking about physical science, CAT subjects. And that is now having a bearing when it comes to absorption or admission of students into the Funza Lushaka bursary scheme when it comes to the STEM subjects. So I would like to know from the department, in terms of the Funza Lushaka bursary, how is it structured to ensure that we have more STEM students enrolled, in order to ensure that when we go to school level, they will then be able to teach pure mathematics? Because when we do most of our oversights at schools in our various political constituencies, you will find that fewer schools are offering less and less mathematics and physical science, because there is a lack of proper teachers who can teach us at the high school level, especially. I know at the school where I used to be a teacher, Currently at the moment, my physics teacher was the last person who was a proper physics teacher. And that school is sitting now with a dilemma that they can't find proper physical science teachers. So I would just like to know how the FUNSA bursary is then structured in that regard, given that most students nowadays at a normal school level just takes maths literacy and they're not concerned about pure mathematics, which excludes them from taking physical science. And also when we piggyback on that question, we then also looked at subjects like robotics that are introduced, coding that are introduced. And without DSI's assistance that we saw in the Northern Cape, my concern would also then be, how is the FUNSA Lushaka curriculum bursary structured for the DBE curriculum in the education department to ensure that we give life to robotics and coding at the school level? I know teachers are being trained, but like I said, if you don't have a proper acumen of the ICT, it might pose a bigger challenge going into the future. We then also see with the FUNSA Lushaka bursaries, and when these students actually become trainee educators, the concern normally arises that there is a mismatch in what they've actually been taught and what they actually have to go and teach at the school. You will find somebody that has history and they end up at the school now being forced to teach business studies. So those are the little anomalies that we also need to look at, why we then have students that might not end up being equipped enough for the higher education sector. Okay, then we have 54 pilots centers on the Nexa. So I would just like to know which of these, the names of the 54 pilot centers which were identified, and there is no money yet. 287.3 million rand was set aside for Nexa, which will only take 10,000 students, which, as was highlighted, 150,000 students might not be able to access the Nexa system. So what plans are in place to ensure that we do not leave anyone behind to have access to the system in the long run? And how involved is the department in to ensure that the mathematical framework of DBE is properly envisaged, given that it was implemented in 2019 and we just needed to get an update to see what benefits that the mathematical framework actually have in terms of ensuring that we perform better in the terms setting. Basically, that's all that the last question. Normally, when we were still in the basic education portfolio, myself and Honorable McKessy would forever highlight the fact that the FUNSA Lushaka bursary, mostly they are the ones that are absorbed into the schooling system as educators. But we have self-funded students that seem to not get employment, because most schools will tell you in principle that they have instruction to first take the FUNSA Lushaka bursaries holders instead of those who are self-funded, with them in most cases being absorbed into quintiles 4 and 5. And if you will do a proper study, you will find that those self-funded students are those ones that actually sit with proper mathematics, physical science, life science, CAT skills, and they are then absorbed into the quintile 5 schools, which is then a real detriment to the quintile 1 to 3 schools, because then they will always sit with educators who have maths lit instead of proper maths. And that's where you will see the uptake of coding and robotics will mostly go towards schools with quintile 5. So my concern is that if we don't actually make sure that we absorb more of these learners into the education sector, we will always sit with a situation where mostly you would find a learner from quintile 5 going into these sectors of the STEM fields. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable King. Honorable Mananiso.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Allow me to leave my video off. I'm in Akashia. Chairperson, let me start by actually welcoming the presentation and as well acknowledge and appreciate the work that I actually observed yesterday at the summit. And one believes that we are on the right direction as the peace sector. And I'm happy about now we're speaking about what we are doing, not what needs to be done. I would like to congratulate the team that they are at the right direction in terms of ensuring that we bring this skills revolution to life, not just rhetoric topic that no skill set, they are not equal to the economic opportunities and markets and so on. So I want to congratulate the team for actually putting their efforts in moving South Africa forward. Chairperson, in terms of my questions, I'm partly covered on the issue of the implementation of timeframe as alluded by Honorable King. However, one wants to know what could be the challenges that could have impeded the department to actually have challenges in implementing their program on NATSA, as we have noted that in terms of their timeframe, they are not actually keeping to their time frame. And the other issue is I want to check any prospect to include sign language on their plan, because we have seen just last week the announcement that it's been recognized as one of the 12 officials' language. So I just want to check if they have like plans in putting it as part of their program. And as well, I just want to ask the department to give us the plan of action on the NAGSA awareness outreach programs, because they have alluded that they are anticipating to do lobbying and advocacy with regards to the program in an awareness type of form. So can they send a program of action with regards to that? Lastly, it's on the fact that Honorable King could have alluded on, but mine is just to check to say what is it that the department is doing to ensure that there's a true transition from your CET, your FET, in terms of ensuring that your CETAs, they play a role in ensuring that other people are being catered to ensure that they you know, they get funds for bazaaries like your Funda Lushaka, even if it's not Funda Lushaka, but what is it that the department is doing to ensure that CETAs as well have some funding focal for education program as a standalone? So that's only my questions for now, but well done team and keep it up. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mananiso. Honorable Makesi.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the presentation. I think this was a discussion that is really would have been good, as Honorable Chantal has said, that to actually have basic education also involved. But I hope, as you said, that at some stage we will have an interaction with them, because for DHET to succeed, basic education has to do its part fully. I just want to find out, with regard to the ECD, I remember that the qualification of ECD practitioners were under review. And now today I hear that they have to have N2 level 4. Is that the final qualification that they require, or is it still under review? Because last time that I checked, it was apparently they were supposed to go to university to study at the university and have a degree, a three-year degree from the university in order for them to qualify and, to be practitioners of ECD. So if I can maybe have a response on that. And I also want to ask, regarding the second chance metric program, What I remember about that, as much as the department is saying that it's a good program, what we discovered was that it had a very high dropout rate, that many students were not completing the program. If that is still the case, and if it is still the case, what has been done to ensure that that more students do complete the program? The other issue that I also want to ask is regarding the policy that DBE has. I think I did mention that a while ago. The thing is, there was a study that was done on grade fours, and it was discovered that the grade four learners in South Africa, a majority of them, they cannot read for understanding. So then on top of that is coupled with a policy that progresses students, learners who repeat a class twice. So if you happen to repeat a class, if you fail a class and then if you fail it again, then you are moved to the next grade. So that means like these learners that cannot read for understanding, they actually end up getting to grade nine, for instance, and ended up in TVET colleges. And also in CT. In CT, I don't see that being a problem or a hindrance because I don't think it's not very academic. But TVET colleges are academic. How do you know, like, you know, how is the department dealing with that? And how are you ensuring that those learners are identified and they are assisted? Because I think that is also the reason why we're seeing that is because of the foundation phase that is very weak, and not having, you know, ECD practitioners that are well trained to be able to assist. Because if we miss it from, you know, from grade one up to grade four, you know, for learners to be able to learn to read for understanding, then it's very difficult to actually for learners to catch up over the years. The other question is the African languages teachers. I think we don't have enough teachers that qualify who are doing African languages. We do have Zulu and Xhosa to some extent, but in the other languages, African languages, we have very limited numbers. I would like to find out if we have, how many teachers do we have that are coming in that are doing African languages, how many do complete, and if they are actually absorbed by the system. And finally, the other question is that the dropout rate in basic education is very high. I think the last time I checked, it was 50% of learners drop out at grade nine. Are all those learners absorbed by TVET colleges? Do you have the numbers? I would like to maybe, you know, if you can maybe see, if you don't have it today, a response to the question, maybe at some stage we can be given a table just for us to have an understanding that are we really absorbing those students that that drop out from basic education? Because it's always been an argument that those learners, they end up in TVET colleges. But I would like to really, you know, to see that is it actually the case of ultimately do they end up in TVET colleges or even in CETs? That will actually give us an indication of, like, you know, how is basic education faring compared to DHET in terms of numbers and ensuring that learners do complete their education. I think that's about it. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Makesi. Honorable Mahlatsi.
Thank you very much, Chair, and good morning to yourself and honorable members on the platform. And good morning to the team from DHET. Chair, let me first and foremost appreciate the presentation made by Department of Higher Education based on the subject matter that we're dealing with today. Secondly, one must also echo the words of Honorable Mananiso in appreciating the work that the department is doing in as far as the World Skills Conference that is taking place. indeed, one is impressed by the work that the department is doing, and we really want to, you know, give encouragement to the department to really continue to, you know, focus on the TVET sector and continue to improve it, as we've always said in the portfolio committee that TVETs ought to be institutions of choice, and with the work that they're doing, it really gives one some form of comfort that we are moving towards the right direction. Chair, in as far as the presentation is concerned, I also want to know, in as far as Funzi Lushaga program, that whether the department and CBE is in an alignment of Funzi Lushaga program with the skills, with the needs of the country, in line with the skill set and priorities. Because like other honorable members have indicated, it is important that Funzi Lushaga feeds on what the country needs at this point, in as far as subject choices for teachers. Pure maths is quite a critical element that we need to look into, but whether the department, higher education, together with GPE, do they look into those things? Do they have that particular alignment and collaboration in terms of what we need as a country? On the early childhood development issues, I just want to know, what is the extent of collaboration in relation to curriculum development, and particularly on its interrelations with higher education research output? With the actual learning materials for the early childhood development ECD sector, we really want to check whether that collaboration is there, so that the outcomes of ECD practitioners are in line with what we need. Because in the recent report study by DBE, it says, in relation to ECD census report, the report indicates to us that 42% of ECDs are not registered. Therefore, the risk to the quality of learning of the children of this country is at risk. Therefore, ECD practitioners' development is a critical aspect in order to improve the early learning. Therefore, how are the departments collaborating to increase higher education focus on ECDs? Coming to the issue of mother tongue, the presentation does indicate that there are institutions that, you know, have produced that focuses on different languages. But Sklalo, mother tongue teaching and learning have a direct impact on learning outcomes. I just want to find out from the department, how are the departments working together in having a systemic way of developing African language for teaching and learning in various learning disciplines, such as math, science, and other, you know, subjects beyond the program funded by the EU? On teacher development, Chair, I just want to find out from the department, how is the department supporting efforts of articulation for learners who did not get a school leaving certificate in grade 9 or 10 or 11. On the next, I just want to find out, what is the potential impact of its implementation, and why is the department not prioritizing its implementation in as far as budget is concerned? Because I had DDG indicating that this particular program is, you know, is not funded. It, you know, it depends on the grants. So what then becomes the impact of the fact that it's not funded? I would also, Chair, want just to make these few recommendations to the department, that maybe the Department of Higher Education, Science and Innovation should have a focused program on early childhood learning to harness the cognitive development of children. The support should be content development related, as well as practitioner development, in order to strengthen the research focus on early learning to transform the ECD sector. Because you might do well at higher education, but if your foundation phase is not proper, therefore you have, you know, it's as used as it's I wouldn't use the word useless, but I would want to, you know, say it's a primary foundation that makes us make the output of higher education become much more better and seamless. And my second recommendation, Chair, it will be that maybe the department should expand protocols in various areas to include the science and innovation component to the mainstream research and development in enhancing government implementation, because it is important that, you know, our research phase, in as far as output is concerned, is so concrete that the output becomes exactly what we would want to see. Because, you know, like we've always said with the institutional autonomy colloquium we had, that institutions of higher learning are a reservoir of knowledge, but they become, you know, that knowledge must be, you know, user-friendly to respond to the economic needs of our country and to make sure that the skill sets that we develop out of these institutions, including basic education, including ECTs, becomes an output that becomes a, you know, a necessary and a useful product so that we can take the country forward. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mahlatsi. Honorable Sibiya.
Thank you, Chairperson. Greetings to everyone. Thanks for the presentation. I think some of the questions are covered, except to say regarding the monitoring issue. How is the department monitoring the outcomes of its collaboration with Department of Basic Education in relation to the transformation of curriculum? How are the departments working together towards decolonization? I thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Sibiya. Honorable Boshoff.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I want to raise something which might be a little bit off-center, but I think with regarding to what we have heard today, it is still relevant. I have a little thing about this proper mathematics and mathematics literacy. I think one should regard these as two quite different subjects suitable for different persons. And I want to state from my own experience that I was one of the learners who really struggled with mathematics. And I think my mother went to a grave with a with a problem with the fact that I had to drop mathematics and do matric without it, because she thought it was unthinkable that anybody would do so. But in my own case, I wasn't going to pass matric with mathematics, because all my time went into that, and then I didn't have time for the other subjects. In the end, of course, I had to keep up and to catch up with the mathematics that I've lost in post-school education. And, well, I had to get everything that I lost at that stage. But it, to me, it's very important to realize that it's not the first grade and the second grade subject. We have people with different abilities and different levels of development, because we are all graded into classes as if we are similar, as if we have all mastered the same skills, learning skills and cognitive skills at the age of 13 or at the age of 15 or whatever. While some may reach the mathematical skills at 11 that they need at 13, and other may reach the language skills at 12 that they need at 12, and other may reach the mathematical skills at 16, which they had needed at 14 to be successful at school. And of course, the moment one says that, which I have said just now, people say, no, now you are downplaying the importance of mathematics. Of course, mathematics, pure mathematics and physical sciences, chemistry and physics, is essential in our education system, and that every learner who has the ability and wants to do that should have the opportunity to do so. But it should not be regarded as, let's say, something bad if some learners actually prefer mathematics literacy because it is more suitable to their personalities and their development. And especially if we look at post-school education at the NASCA, I think it's also important to realize, you know, I've had this argument with many people, and they would say mathematics have really some practical use in everyday life. And then you would say, okay, like, and then they would give you some real life problem. And then I could say, yes, that's exactly what is done in mathematics literacy. In other words, mathematics as a subject, I don't really want to use words like real mathematics or pure mathematics because that seems to downgrade the other. It is a theoretical science really essential to train people into ways of thinking which is necessary for some occupations. But the practical everyday kind of things about calculating what you are actually paying for your car when you do a lease payment or whatever, that is done in mathematical literacy. And people very often just look at the easiest question in the whole paper and say, that is what's been asked for matriculants in mathematics literacy. This is a farce. While in fact, mathematics literacy is a serious subject, very well adapted to most people's everyday's needs. And mathematics as such, of course, also is essential, but maybe for other people. I really just wanted to raise that as it is an underlying kind of sentiment, always referring to mathematics literacy as something like, I don't know, monkey mass or well, there are many different nicknames given to mathematics literacy to indicate that it is actually you know, of less value and something just for the people who don't have the ability to learn. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Borshoff, and thank you very much to all members for their comments, questions, and recommendations. I think from my side, I have just a few questions and comments. Let me start with this one on languages. The department indicates as part of their strategic project that resonate with the DBE's priorities, a number of interventions around African languages and literacy, or the strengthening of the teaching of African languages and literacy. And if funny enough, you know, as I was going through that slide, I wrote a particular question that Honorable Makesi then spoke to. And I would like the department to help us with this narrative. So there's this narrative that there aren't sufficient educators in African languages. Hence, in certain instances, when we in basic education speak about increasing access to the teaching of African languages in our schools, particularly in our, you know, historically Model C public schools, there's this narrative that there aren't enough, you know, educators in different African languages. And I think perhaps from my side, I'd really appreciate a substantiation on that, on whether or not that is valid. In fact, if I think about how Honorable Makesi spoke to it, so do we have a situation where there's density in a particular particular languages, maybe Sizulu, Nisbedi, or is it generally the case across all African languages?
so that we understand, you know, because the counter argument from parents then becomes, no, but this is an excuse that is being used not to offer these subjects or these languages within the schools. So if the department can assist us in whether or not that narrative holds any weight at all. And then in relation to the three centers of special needs education, which are, you know, currently hosted at UP, UJ and WITS, one would like to understand if there is an intention to replicate such centers across the country, you know, increasing access in small towns and rural areas, also considering the stigmatization that really comes with learners with special needs, particularly in these small towns and rural areas. So do we intend on replicating these centers across the country, and is it something that could be doable in the near future? And perhaps also the department could indicate if, you know, in that is the role being played by the universities themselves, where universities are taking initiative, or is it the department that is encouraging universities to establish new centers? On the evaluation of university programs, colleagues, this one is such a personal one for me. and I've said this once before, and I want to say it again. I really worry about the training that our educators go through. And I really think we need to bring one another into confidence on how we're actually literally implementing the strengthening of the curricula that educators need to go through at TVET colleges, at universities. And of course, I'll always speak from the premise of UNISA, where a segment of the study guide that was speaking to educational technology and the digital divide in 2020 was referring the example that was used to speak on the digital divide had a telephone, like literally a landline, and then it had a Nokia 3310. And this was in 2020, and I was just like, how do you even use that as an example to make educators understand the digital divide when we are now dealing with iPhones and dealing with, you know, a whole different sphere, dealing with drones. You know, some of the things we found out about at the World Skills Conference is that we in South Africa are producing quite a large number of drone pilots. And then when we speak about the digital divide in the curricula that is used to educate educators who must educate these future drone pilots, we are using a Nokia 3310 as an example. And this is one segment. Honorable Sibiya speaks about decolonizing the curricula and education. When you look at DDG Zungu, the study guide at UNISA, when it speaks on, for example, when it speaks on language and the politics of language in education, currently it's way off bar. It's nowhere close to the type of discussions we're having with Honorable Boshoff continuously back and forth. It's nowhere close to the presentation of the department on work around language transformation that they gave us, that you colleagues gave us at Stellenbosch recently. Nowhere near that. So for me, it's really, really worrying. And that's just on the fact of what the curricula is speaking to. If we were to then speak on the actual assessment, the process of the assessment, and I think, colleagues, this also ties into, we are excited about the fact that COVID has accelerated a push and drive towards, or maybe not excited, but as we, maybe rather let me say, as we reflect on how, on the push that COVID has given us as a sector on remote learning, et cetera,
some of the matters we need to learn from when we look at UNISA, for example, is the authenticity of one's qualification. That Unompendulo did this work. Unompendulo is therefore attained this knowledge. Unompendulo therefore has this skill. Unompendulo therefore is equipped to be an educator in a classroom. But when Unompendulo is just copying Dibulelo's work and they together sit wherever and say, Chomi, what is the answer to, you know, question two, etc. How certain are we that indeed Unompendulo and Dibulelo are ready to take over these classrooms and harness the future the future of our country, right? So those are some of the concerns that one has, and it's because Didi Zung, and I'm using UNISA as a reference, not because I'm attacking UNISA, but I you know, did this PGCE with UNISA, and I'm worried, and also because UNISA has, when you look at the numbers that are coming out of UNISA, they are massive, right? So it's almost like a factory, you know, with mass, you know, production targets. So that is what really a concern, DDG Zung, and we need to, as a committee, be brought into confidence on how we are. You know, we see that what colleagues are referring to, that this, you know, meeting once a year, something like this, yeah, that slide. But we all understand in this meeting how important education is, and I think it's problematic for us to invest so much into it, yet the output is not guaranteed to have the kind of outcomes and impact that we want it to have. And then in terms of teacher supply and demand, I'd like to understand the figures around that, if there are numbers that colleagues can share with us. So how many educators have we been able to produce over the past couple of, I don't know, years? So understanding the relationship between the supply and demand, and whether or not maybe it is concentrated in certain professions, and therefore, because it's one thing to say we don't have enough educators in what? And because I've got a feeling that in a certain aspect we could have too many who are currently qualifying in a particular space, therefore leading to the high unemployment rates of qualified teachers. Because I'd like to believe that there are many young people who are qualified either through the undergrad in basic education or through the PGCE who are currently unemployed. On career guidance, colleagues, I don't think we're doing enough. Yes, on the element of young people understanding how they move from DBE into DHET, either through maybe the TVETs or however it may be, the various issues around matriculation. But on something very simple matters, you know, when you speak to young people, you really wonder where that life orientation session is. And this is where colleagues are saying it's so important for DBE to have been here. But I think maybe what could also assist us is the Department of Higher Education. You are running IKETA. Do you believe you're doing enough? Is that program that is responsible for career guidance adequately funded to do its work? And how do we strengthen the work that needs to be done? Young people are way too confused when it comes to what happens now. So grade 9, what happens now? Matric, what happens now? And yes, there is a huge responsibility that communities must take on this. And this is where, you know, social compacting is important. This is where social institutions really need to play their part. And there was a time when there were many NGOs, there were many churches, various organizations in our communities who are really going out there and telling young people about what opportunities are available. And I think that culture has been lost, and maybe we collectively as honorable members need to take upon that responsibility first as ourselves to say, Honorable King, Honorable Boshoff, Honorable Makesi, Honorable Matlatsi, Honorable Litsie, we will all in our constituency office call on the Department of Higher Education, call on the Department of Basic Education, call on universities. And this is where we need the department to really play a mediatory role or a liaison role with universities, with colleges, to say, when we request as members of the community for these institutions to come to our spaces to tell young people about what opportunities are there, that they avail themselves. I mean, why do we want to have the type of chaos and confusion that we have at the start of each academic year, where young people are confused, they've applied for the wrong things, they didn't know this exists, they didn't know CATCH exists, they are just confused. Now we are all running around like headless chickens, when we could be from now in June, beginning with these type of projects. In fact, from grade 9, I believe, we should be really assisting young people in understanding where to from here. Because even when they are in varsity, even when they are in the TVET college, even when they are finished with their undergrad, even if when they are finished with their first diploma, there's still a great sense of confusion as to where to from here. And so I guess the career guidance does not only speak to the first phase of coming into these institutions, but even as you're in the space itself, post school, there's a lot of confusion. So I think we really need to do a lot of work in that, colleagues, all of us collectively, but the department needs to also bring us into confidence on how do we strengthen this particular work. And then perhaps also if the department could indicate to us whether they've made an analysis of the impact or effectiveness of these streams in DBE. You know, when I went to this, or the school I went to, you could take whichever subjects you wanted to take from all ends of the spectrum. If you wanted to do physics and arts and history, you know, it was fine. Or you wanted to do physics and art and home economics, it was fine. But you know, in some schools, because of course of also the capacity of those schools, there's these streams where you must do the sciences, or you must do the commerce subject. And I have my own views on that, but I don't know if DHET has made an analysis of the impact of that when these young people then have to come into higher education, and whether or not it works or does not work, the limitations of it, and the successes of it. And then there's a view that universities in particular are increasing their APS scores over time in order to manage the demand for universities in particular. And I don't know if the department could assist us in clarifying that narrative, because I think if DBE is working seamlessly or tirelessly rather to ready young people to access these universities, but these universities continue to make themselves inaccessible, then we have really a great crisis. And I think colleagues in the meeting have already spoken to issues around institutional autonomy and maybe how that then becomes a hindrance. I mean, I don't think it's even a point of debate. Of course, maybe Honorable Boshoff would say maybe we need to debate it, but we know at Stellenbosch University, that is something that we could really question. I'll leave it at that for now. I'm sorry, honorable members, today I've taken the minutes from Honorable Litsie. I think I want to apologize for being a bit lengthy. Perhaps, but also the department could indicate if DHET and DBE did consult one another during the development of the DBE three-stream model, which may have some overlaps and duplications with the NCV. If the department could indicate to us if they are overlaps that we could see into the future for the the NCV, or will it be absorbed into the three-stream model of DBE? And then, of course, in relation to that, there would be an urgent need to review both programs to identify and address the duplications. And then perhaps also indicate the fact that it is concerning that the DHET continues to implement mandates that are not funded from the fiscus. And then maybe the department could assist us in understanding when the EU funding was received and what will happen when these funds are depleted. Also, perhaps also the DHET could indicate to us whether or not they've engaged DBE in the delay of the phasing out of the senior certificate to allow for the full development and implementation of NASCA. And how much is the allocation to DBE for the implementation of the senior certificate, and whether there's a consideration to redirect the funds for senior certificate to CET from CET to NASCA as it will be phased out. Yeah, so I'll leave it at that for now. DDG Zung and DDG Fuchane, I hope you've been able to capture those questions, what you aren't able to respond to now and may need colleagues to submit in writing, you are more than welcome to do so. Over to you, DDG Zung.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. If you may allow, with your permission, that I don't switch on my video because of the bandwidth. Thank you for the questions and also the inputs from members. We will attempt to respond to all the questions. Where we have some gaps, we will probably provide additional information. As I've indicated earlier on, Chair, we also have one representative from the university, Mr. Mandi Sakwe, who will also assist, particularly on some of the questions that relate to the university matters, that she will assist in responding to those. And therefore, I would request that maybe she joins in responding to some of those questions that relate to the university. I will then request DDG Fuchane to respond on the ones that relate to CET and issues around NASCA, and I will then respond in some of those that perhaps have not been responded to, particularly around the TVAT matters as well. With your permission, Chair, may I allow Ms. Mandi Sakwe to assist in the ones that relate to university branch. Ms. Tau.
Thank you, DDG, and good morning to the executive. Good morning to the executive. Good morning to everyone.
Your volume is a bit low, Ms. Tau. If you may try and speak closer to the mic.
Okay. With me is Ms. Michelle Murphy, who is hands-on in the program where we are collaborating with the DBE. I'm going to hand over to her. Thank you so much, Chair, and good morning, honourable members of the committee. My name is Michelle Murphy. I'm the Director of Teacher Education at the DHET, and I must say thank you very much to the honourable members who posed the question, many of them, and I'll try my best to answer as many as I can in terms of the capturing. But as she indicated, others will be responded to in writing. I've tried to thematize the question, but there might be some overlap. So first of all, I'd like to address the question regarding the EU funding. In 2015, we signed a contract with the European Union for in particular the teacher education part of it, was 200 million rand to be extended over a period of 5 years. And within that particular project or program, we were able to address issues and gaps and priority areas across the preschooling, schooling, and post-schooling sectors. That money has almost come to an end. We are closing out the projects now, and we have a minimal amount of money, around 30 million, that we are hoping to use in order to respond to other urgent priority areas in the sector. But once the money is depleted, and I would imagine that would be by the end of next year, then of course we are going to have to use other avenues to support our universities to offer quality teaching and learning. Which leads me on to the question that one of the honourable members mentioned around the quality of teaching and learning. And from the department side, I must acknowledge that there's been research done that has shown in some universities the curriculum for the teacher education is varied. In some universities, the content excludes some of the important components of, for example, mathematics that need to be taught. In addition, some other research does talk to the fact that our teachers, when they graduate, do not have the requisite subject content knowledge to be able to teach. And of course, we know that that then transfers or transitions into poor learner performance in schools. So I won't belabor the point about the research, except that I would like to emphasize and acknowledge the department's concern around all these issues. And in response to that, we have utilized the European Union funding to strengthen teacher education. So I'll just speak about in the schooling phase, not the other phases, because they all, activities we've implemented there. So what we've done, particularly in the foundation phase, and in early childhood care and development as well as the intermediate phase, we are very concerned about language and literacy as well as mathematics. And I'm sure the honourable colleagues will understand the rationale behind that. If you consider the Tim's finding around math,
the device you're using is so the sound is fading. It comes and goes, and it's really hard to listen consistently.
Okay, thank you, honourable member. I'm going to connect on another device. If she allows me to.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate that.
Honourable colleagues, I've connected on another device. Can you hear me clearly?
I think it may be better if you can just switch off the other. Okay, I've muted the other device. I think we should be fine.
I will ask Ms. Blackwood to do that. Perfect. All right. So I'm just going to continue, and I apologise that you could not hear me clearly. I was speaking about the poor quality of our graduates when they enter schooling and acknowledging that research does show that in some universities we have poor quality of graduates, but we must also acknowledge that that is not the case in all of them. And I had also attested to the fact that the European Union funding, we had 200 million rand of that to strengthen the quality of teacher education and across different sectors. And I wanted to speak about the ECD and the schooling sectors. And so what we have done is, colleagues, honourable members will know that we have a number of policies that frame the development of curriculum in teacher education. And so the minimum requirements for teacher education qualifications is the one that was developed in 2015. And when universities submit their programs for us to check for compliance against the policy, they have to make sure that they are in alignment with that. And that covers a whole range of learning areas. It also talks to the scarce skills areas that Funza Lushaka will recruit teach students and allocate bursaries. So in that way, there's strong collaboration with the Department of Basic Education and Training, and universities are aware of those scarce skills subjects and accommodate the new students into that in their programs. I remember hearing something about sign languages, and certainly sign language is a scarce skill and recommended subject for new teachers to take up. And we do have a number of universities, offhand I can think of two, that offer sign language as part of the curriculum. I think it's Salplaki and it's Wits University at this particular point. So we do ensure that that is covered in the policy. It is in the policy currently for minimum requirements for teacher education qualifications. Another question was around, well, how do we ensure that we include African languages in our teacher education programs? And we've done that. We actually attended to that in about 2015, particularly in the foundation phase, where we ensured that African languages were part of and still are part of the curriculum. And across the rest of the schooling phase, that policy dictates that all student teachers must take one African language as home language or as first additional language or as a language of communicative competence. So it's addressed in that way. And outside of the policy with the European Union funding, there was a question from one of the honorable members around the Centers of African Languages teaching that we supported and the two centers that we currently have. When I look at the statistics around the number of learners and who take the languages, all 11 official languages, but I'm not counting sign language here because I don't have those stats, it's very clear that isiZulu, isiXhosa, and Setswana have the highest number of learners. And so when we developed those Centers for African Languages teaching, we covered isiZulu and Sesotho at UJ. We covered isiXhosa, which is being established at the University of the Western Cape in collaboration with Rhodes, Walter Sisulu, and the University of Fort Hare. We currently have a proposal to develop a Center of African Languages teaching for Setswana, and we do intend to offer funding permitted to the development of two or three other centers of African languages teaching in the faculties of education where those languages, in terms of the provinces in which those languages are located. So that is the thinking around how we will strengthen African languages. But honorable members, I also do want to indicate that in terms of the Pearl's findings around our South African learners and their performance in reading in particular, and this is across all the languages, the spoken languages, the results, as I'm sure you know, were abysmal. And in fact, we were way below the norm of 500. We were around 369. And so our colleagues in the DBE are working endlessly in terms of addressing this issue for teachers who are in service. But we also have tried to address it through the CALCS. And in particular, in the CALCS, we have started with a project on strengthening the reading of African languages. We all know how important reading is in order for eventual learner success going through to matric, achieving the National Senior Certificate. but also in tertiary education studies. And so the teaching of reading is absolutely crucial. And in both the centers, we have dedicated funding set aside for the universities to develop units in terms of how to teach the specific language, for the lecturers to actually be supported to acquire the skills in how to teach reading to their students, and for the students on teaching track or the graduates once they go out being skilled in that area. And research does show that the teaching of reading is a priority because it is not of a good enough quality to ensure our learners and even our student teachers are able to acquire the competence and the skills. Moving forward then to, do we have enough teachers in African languages? Well, that speaks as well as teachers in the scarce skill subjects. So I've put that under the theme of supply and demand of teachers in South Africa. A little bit of background. The Department of Higher Education and Training has actually utilized European Union funding to implement a report, a study on the supply and demand of teachers in South Africa. That's the phase one study. We've received the findings, and now we have held numerous discussions on different fora within the provinces themselves, as well as with DBE, with SAIS, and we've held a national dialogue just recently around this priority area. It could potentially lead to a crisis because the report shows that by 2030, we should have 45,500 new teachers produced in that particular year. And one of the honorable members did mention, so do we know how many teachers we have and how many teachers we need? Well, I'll just give you a quick response to that in terms of our 2020 data on the number of teacher graduates. We do publish an annual report, but a year behind, of course, on the number of teachers. We have disaggregated by specializations and languages. So we have that data available. But what I want to focus on is that in 2020, we produced 30,806 new teachers into the system. The supply and demand data findings then are, you know, a bit of a, we are in a bit of a crisis because it says 45,500 by 2030. However, if we track the pattern of increases each year in terms of those reports that we have developed, approximately 1,500 increases every year. So we're not too worried about numbers, honorable members. What we are worried about is, first of all, the specializations of those students coming out, and are they talking to the demands in the country? The phases, which phase are they teaching? Are they have they graduated to teach in? We're concerned about that because we could have 50,000 new teachers, but if they are not responding to the needs in the country, then we do have a crisis. I want to also point out that in 2018, one of our reports that we developed showed that of the total percentage of graduates in that year, the number that were appointed into public schools in terms of purcell, or let me rather say the percentage, was 43%. And so we asked the question, if we are employing less than half of the cohort that we produce, we are not addressing the issue of supply and demand properly. And in light of that, the department is now working towards phase two of the supply and demand of teachers, trying to address and gather data on those concerns that we have, And of course, just also to let you know that our study was based on 5 factors, phase 1. It was based on a learner-teacher ratio, and those findings are quite interesting as well, about where the highest number of learners are in terms of one teacher teaching. It's also based on the attrition of teachers in terms of retirement or being ill or through death. It's based on the enrollments of learners into schools. It's based on subject choices that we need to bear in mind. And it's also based on the languages of learning and teaching in the different schools and how that would then inform our supply of teachers for that. And so phase 2, we're hoping that we get that up and running. And once that is approved, we will then be able to report in more nuanced details around our supply and demand needs in the country. Then the question of Funza Lushaka, and I did indicate that we do collaborate with DBE in terms of the priority areas, and the universities do offer those scarce skill subjects. But in order for us to be current, we need to look at other subjects coming up. And one of the honorable members mentioned coding and robotics. And that is certainly now something that we are encouraging the universities to include into their programs. And 2 of the universities are currently, they've developed short courses in robotics, coding and robotics, and some of our university lecturers from other universities are attending those courses. But these 2 universities are also supporting the DBE in terms of teachers in service attending that. However, I must state that I know for a fact from our engagements in the provincial meetings with DBE, and with SAIT and the unions and ECDB CETA, that the unions through the TUC with DBE are expending a large amount of funding in terms of developing their members in coding and robotics, but the DBE as well is addressing this through the provinces and the funding that they have. The question around, we can say high numbers of teachers are being trained in this, but the question is, to what extent do those skills filter into the schools and assist our young people in schools to develop those skills for the 21st century? So do we have the infrastructure? Do we have the resources in the schools? And do we have enough teachers to teach that? I want to move now to, I think this might be, regarding the Funza Lushaka and the employment preferences, this has been an issue that's come up in a number of different forums. In fact, yesterday I was at the launch of one of our PGCE programs at a particular university, and somebody came up to me afterwards and said, can you please help? I have a daughter who graduated 3 years ago and who cannot get into schools in the public sector. And the reason is possibly that she is not a Funza Lushaka graduate. She was self-funding, and this particular person is concerned that the DBE as employer prioritizes Funza Lushaka. And I gave my word yesterday that I would contact our DBE colleagues today to address this and to ask them to also respond to the questions. So that is certainly on our radar. The last question is around early childhood development. And yes, I think we, in terms of the question regarding the qualifications, they were under review. Yes, the DBE has already completed a report which shows us and all stakeholders in ECD the data regarding the qualifications of the practitioners. And the end goal is that we, DBE and DHET, should be working towards professionalization of those ECD practitioners. And our policy that we developed from the European Union funding
specifically focuses on professionalization. One of the honorable members mentioned, well, is there scope for the practitioners to upskill? Definitely, in terms of the policy that was in the slides that were presented earlier by Chair, by our DDG rather. And it starts from level four. So, I'm sorry, from level five. So we then anticipate and work with the Department of Basic Education in terms of, well, how many practitioners do you have who now have level four? And we have the level five higher certificate in ECD that they can transition into. And from the higher certificate, they can go into the Bachelor of Education and the honors and the masters right up to doctorate level. I think the issue that we are aware of from our discussions with the 10 universities who are developing the programs in terms of professionalizing the practitioners is that practitioners are concerned about the costs associated with going into the higher certificate and higher up into the B.Ed. We all understand and know that their remuneration as practitioners will not allow them to pay for their own studies. So they're concerned about that. And they're also concerned about salaries. Once they have become professionals, will their salaries be commensurate with their qualifications? But that's our DBE colleagues will handle. I think I'm just looking quickly through my notes, and I actually don't see anything further. So, honourable colleagues, I hope that I've addressed your questions. If I don't, I just want to reiterate then that we can, through the channels, you could submit those through for us to engage in written format. Thank you, Chair.
No, thank you, Ms. Mathey. May I request DDG Fuchane to respond on the CET matters.
Thank you very much, DDG Zungu. I've isolated the CET matters and I will go through them briefly without compromising on the content. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee and to the Honorable Members for the questions, the comments and the recommendations made. Let me start with the questions that were given to us by Honorable King, and her questions were related to the fact that the dates in the Gazette were already issued and whether we are certain that we will meet the allocated timeframes for the absorption of the students. My presentation indicated that we are withdrawing that Gazette and issuing a new Gazette with a new timeframes, as we will not be able to establish or implement NASCA in the second half of the year. The advantage that we are sitting at is that we have not started the process of advocacy for new students or the process of enrollments. So there are no students that are going to be left behind. The senior certificate is still in place and it will continue as per normal. There is no direct impact, negative impact on any student in terms of the delay of the implementation of NASCA for as long as we still have the senior certificate in place. At the moment, we have the senior certificate in place and that is continuing as per normal. The second question asked by Honorable King was she wanted to know about the 54 pilot centers. If Mr. Sondi can just run through the list, I'm definitely not going to read them because we are going to make this available. The principle that was used is that in each province, whilst we may not be able to cover each and every district, but there must not be a duplication in any one particular district so that you can have as much coverage as possible within a province that covers the various districts. Now, the 54 pilot centers are not only for implementation of NASCA. They are overall implementation strengthening of our CET colleges, particularly our centers. so that we can strengthen not only partnerships, but all over program delivery in the pilot centers before they can then be taken over to the rest of the centers. Honorable Manani so asked us, what are the challenges in the implementation of the NASCA? Honorable Manani, so the biggest challenge that we have is the funding, that we don't have funding from the fiscus. There's no dedicated funding for either the development or the implementation of NASCA. The second challenge that we had is that even with the funding that we had received, for an instance, from the European Union, where we could start with the development of curriculum and also assessment and examinations development, supply chain processes have shown us some challenges. For an example, using the EU funding, we've had to advertise 3 times for the assessment and examinations development. And on this coming Friday, that process is continuing where there is briefing on the proposals. So the nature of the proposals that we get sometimes do not meet the requirements that are required for the development of the development work that is required for NASCA. Honorable Marani also asked us if there are any prospects to include the sign language. We have noted this progressive recommendation, and indeed it is something that we need to be taking up. We will be taking up this matter, and thank you, Honorable Marani, for that recommendation. We have a question from Honorable Makesi, where Honorable Makesi was indicating that there's a very high dropout rate in the second chance matric program. And what is it that we're doing to ensure that we reduce this high dropout rate? Honorable Makesi, it is noted that where you have a dropout rate in the second chance matric program, be it whether it's taking place in a school, or is taking place in the context of community education and training in our centers, it happens where there are not enough support programs to ensure the retention of those students, but also for the students to feel that they are supported for them to be able to improve on the subjects that they want to improve on. In this regard, DBE has done quite a lot of work to ensure that they provide as much as learning support material and readiness programs to keep these students in the institution so that, because there is no third chance matric program, so that the second chance matric program can succeed and do what it is aimed to do. What we are doing, in addition to what DBE is doing in the provision of additional support materials and support programs, it is also very clear that the mental well-being of our students is a concern, both for those that are in DBE schools and in our CECO colleges. And some of them have not succeeded in their first attempt at schools, not because they're not capable, but because many things in life happen to them. Hence the importance of psychosocial support. Now, DBE is bringing that in as well, and we are also bringing that component of psychosocial support for the students to make sure that whatever challenges they had in their first attempt, that at least they can be supported in terms of their second attempt. We are doing that through Higher Health, and of course, DBE has got a lot of structures in place in relation to that. So there are quite a number of interventions that we are doing in this regard. And lastly, as CET, what we think will also attract and keep the students in our centers is that we combine the second matric program with a skill, particularly because some of them are coming in to do 1, 2, or just 3 subjects and can also be easily bored. But it's also quite attractive for the student to know that they can come in for second matric chance program, and then they can exit with either a learner's license or driver's license. And this is important partnership for us with the transport CETA, for an example. Or they can come out with a certificate on end user computing, for an example. Some of them can even take up things like cooking that are available in our CET colleges. So we are looking at that alignment and making it attractive and keeping them within our CET colleges whilst they are doing and completing their second chance matric program. Again, Honorable Mackenzie asked a question that there is a very high dropout rate of 50% in basic education. Are they absorbed in TVET colleges or CET colleges? Whilst I will not be able to give the exact number, I can indicate that the majority of the students in the CET colleges are students who did not make it in mainstream schooling. And they mainly come in for the academic programs, of which currently they constitute 96%, as only 4% constitute our skills programs. So indeed, we do see a high number of your mainstream schooling dropouts coming into our CET colleges. Honorable Mahlatsi asked the question, what is the potential impact of us not implementing NASCAR? And not prioritizing a budget for the implementation of NASCAR? This is a very important question, and it does not take away, of course, from the other important questions that have been asked. And this just really hits the nail on the head and becomes the gist of the matter of discussion. This is saying that we have to continue with the implementation of the senior certificate at least until 2025. Because if you continue with the implementation of the senior certificate, you will not have any student adversely affected by the non-implementation of NASCAR. The plans of the DBE was to cease implementation of the senior certificate by 2023. We are engaging with DBE to continue beyond 2023 and until such time that NASCAR is well established and NASCAR is up and running. So those are the implications. So we need to do this balancing act, bearing in mind of the numbers I spoke about, where I said we are looking at about 160,000, approximately 160,000 students that are in senior certificate and that would have to be absorbed in NASCAR should senior certificate cease. So our colleagues in DBE are aware of our plight and our plea for the continuation of the senior certificate. We have not stopped engaging National Treasury, and even last week we also made another submission of unfunded mandates. This falls under what we categorize as unfunded mandate, which is the implementation of NASCAR. We are also not blind to the fact that the purse of government is tight, and this is bringing us challenges. We cannot successfully implement NASCAR without there being voted funds for the implementation of NASCAR, because even the estimates that we are given for the piloting talks to 287 million, which talks to 10,000 students. The question that was asked by Honorable Sibiya, who asked whether, how is the department monitoring and working together with DBE? We have continuous meetings on our programs with DBE. We have regular meetings with them. In addition to those regular meetings with them, we have an oversight committee which has been established, and that has terms of reference. And this oversight committee is responsible for monitoring and for evaluation and support. The last question that I have on CET related matters is from Honorable Mkachwa. Honorable Mkachwa asked us how much is the allocation of the senior certificate and whether the senior certificate funds will be redirected to the department. Honorable Chair, the senior certificate allocation is with the Department of Basic Education. It is not with DHET, as it is the DBE program. Unfortunately, I'm not able to respond right now on the allocation, but I can find out, and then we can provide that information based on the feedback we'll be getting from DBE. Also important to note that in terms of the allocation that DBE has on the senior certificate is for assessment and exams. So they are not making provision for example, COE for educators and so forth. Whether DBE, when they cease or when they cease or completely phase out the senior certificate, whether those funds will come to DHET, that I'm finding it very difficult to respond to that. I really do not know, but it's something that the colleagues that are responsible for budgets and how funds are allocated will be able to advise. What is important to note is that this is not
a shifting of a function from one government department to another government department, because with a shifting and a migration of a function, then automatically the resources that are allocated to that function would have to shift to the new department. The phasing out of the senior certificate does not mean that DBE is then shifting that senior certificate to DH, because NASCA is a completely new program with a completely new mandate under the department. But I would rather reserve my thinking on this in terms of budget transfer, as it is really just an opinion or not based on any fact, and rather answer well informed after engaging with the relevant colleagues who are able to respond to the budget implications of this matter. I thank you very much, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. I've covered all the CET related questions.
Thank you very much, DG Fuchane, and thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. I think my colleagues have covered extensively all the questions that honorable members asked. I will just touch on one or two. One particularly in relation to the collaboration between DHET and DBE through our entities, in particular the CETAs. One of the CETAs that work very, very closely in supporting DBE is ITDP CETA, which has offered a number of bursaries to a number of educators within DBE. There are other CETAs, of course, but the main one being ITDP CETA, that is a question that was asked by Honorable Mananiso. On one other question that Honorable Makisi asked in relation of the dropouts, particularly of the grade nines, whether they are absorbed in TVET colleges, we probably not directly, but maybe through CETs, because NCV, the entry level for NCV is somebody that has passed grade nine so that they can enter at grade 10, which is an equivalent of NCV level two. And grade 11 equivalent of NCV level 3, and grade 12 being an equivalent of NCV level 4. So if they drop out of grade 9, they will likely probably be joining the CET in this regard, but not directly with TVET colleges per se. But if they have dropped out of grade 10, for instance, I think they stand a good chance of entering NCV level 2 in TVET colleges. And then the other one that I'll probably just touch on it's in relation to the question that was asked in relation to career guidance that we are providing for our learners. I think the question was asked by Honorable Chair, Honorable Mkhatshwe, whether we're doing enough. Certainly not in terms of covering the length and breadth of this country, but there is quite extensive work that is being done in this regard. In a week ago, we were, for instance, in the Free State with the Deputy Minister trying to encourage young people from schools in the Free State, which was hosted by Motewa TVET College, where we opened up our gates for our young people to come and access. So we had some discussions there with the MEC in the Free State, because we picked up that there was somehow an omission in terms of the inclusion of the life orientation educators and their role as in providing the career guidance to the learner. So we then agreed that the next invitation would be sent to to all the schools in the province so that the life orientation teachers can also be taken through and showcase to them what TVETs are about. But this is not just limited to TVETs, but also what CET is about and universities. But in this regard, the focus was encouraging young people to take a career and consider TVET education as the first choice. So we then felt that we would probably put more effort on also showcasing these to the life orientation teachers so that they can be able to share with as many of our learners as possible in this regard. But again, this information, Honorable Chair and Honorable Minister, is not just limited to careers. We also invite the likes of NSFAS, for instance, to talk about funding opportunities for their studies at an early age. We don't have to wait for them till they are at grade 12 that you then tell them that there's NSFAS, because that process of applying NSFAS is also tedious sometimes. So we educate them at that level of grade 9 to say, if you now reach grade 12, this is how you apply for NSFAS and so forth. So NSFAS will be there, but we'll also have our other entity called Higher Health that also educates them on issues of health and the well-being. So we work closely with such entities as well as CETA to say, apart from you going to a TVET college and so forth, we also have other programs in terms of learnerships and, you know, apprenticeship programs and so forth. So we try not to limit to the information that talks only about you know, the TVET opportunities per se. Honorable Chair, you also asked on the whether we have done an analysis of the three streams. Yes, there are continuous engagements in this regard in order to try and ensure that we avoid any possible, you know, duplications, because what DBE is busy at the moment is that they are busy resuscitating what was called technical high schools throughout the country. And as they do that, they will also invest in that regard in terms of the equipment and the building of workshops and so forth. But what they've also done was also to use TVET colleges to capacitate their educators or their facilitators using our facilities as TVET colleges. I have a case in point in Majuba TVET College that took a number of you know, technical teachers or educators in KwaZulu-Natal that were housed at Majuba TVET College to be taught in a number of these you know, technical subjects. But it's there is a continuous engagement in this regard, but we have to ensure that indeed we don't create, you know, a parallel, you know, process in this regard. I think, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, those were part of the questions that were asked. I won't dwell much, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, on the issue of, you know, the decolonization of curricula, because we know that in most of our universities, the colonial studies are well established in many of our universities, perhaps as a field of study, but I think the post-school university itself or institutions have not really been reimagined. I think it's something that it's work in progress. I know we recently, Chair, you hosted us in the colloquium on institutional autonomy, and I think perhaps maybe there could be another one in this in relation to this, particularly on the issue of the use of our languages in teaching and learning on transforming our curricula. Chair and honourable members, I think from our side as department, once more we appreciate the opportunity that we've been provided to appear before you, but also the inputs that you've provided and the guidance in ensuring that we continuously improve as a department in delivering the service that our community needs out there. On that note, Honorable Chair and other members, I thank you. We will await if there are any further follow-up or some additional inputs that we need to provide in this regard. I thank you.
Thank you very much, DDG Zungu. Thank you very much to all colleagues from the department, DDG Fuchane. I think perhaps what really comes out from our engagement is that we definitely need to, at a later stage, meet with our colleagues from basic education. And so we will, colleagues, work tirelessly to make sure that that particular meeting happens and takes place as it was meant to. And I think some of the outstanding matters that we may want to look into, we will address then. But also to perhaps indicate that the information that colleagues have indicated they would like to submit to us in writing, we look forward to receiving it within the next 7 working days. So thank you very much, DDG Zungu, DDG Fuchane and colleagues, and let us continue to commit ourselves to doing the important work that we have been tasked with. I'd like to indicate to members before I close the meeting that we are scheduled to have a midterm review type of meeting where we reflect on the work of the committee in the last 3 years since we have been in office. And we then look into what needs to be prioritized moving forward. And that is a very important exercise for us to embark on. And so the request that has come from the secretariat, the committee secretariat, can you please adhere to it around the dates of it? But we were joking with Anele yesterday saying maybe, you know, on some of these matters, we must just be not dictatorial, I can't say that with a full mouth, but decisive, to say this is when we're meeting, and can members please avail themselves so that we can do that work. So in relation to that, please do avail yourselves. I think we'll see each other on Friday. Our meeting is on HISTL. We do know that the Friday meeting is at 2 o'clock, and so it will be after the budget vote one. And if there are any colleagues who would appreciate a working space, you know, some colleagues' offices have not been affected by the fires. Those of the DA, I think you are fine. But those of you who have been affected by the fires and will be at the precinct for budget vote one and need a space to work from, do indicate to the committee secretariat, and they'll be able to assist you, considering the fact that we'd only have an hour to move to various parks after that meeting, and that might not be sufficient time before the 2 o'clock meeting. So I think that's it, honorable members and colleagues. Have yourselves a lovely rest of the day. It's not afternoon yet. I think this is definitely a record. We've never finished a meeting of DHET before 12 o'clock. I don't know if that's a good thing or what, but I think it speaks to the fact that we would have had a second part to our meeting this morning, which we've not been able to have. But thank you very much. I also see there's colleagues from the DSI. I'm assuming colleagues had joined us due to elements of the meeting that we thought would look into science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, and the linkages there. I hope colleagues have found this meeting to be fruitful for themselves as well. But I think we can benefit more going into the more extensive meeting that we want with basic education. I'm only seeing the colleague now, so hence I just thought I'd recognize him. Thank you so much, and have a lovely afternoon. This meeting has come to an end.
Recording stopped.
DDG Zungu, you didn't invite us to your birthday party.